Hello, it's Monday, June 19th, and you're listening to the DreamStation.cc video game show. I'm your host, Chris, and this is show number 60. Check out our website, www.dreamstation.cc, for news, reviews, interviews, forums, podcast feeds, and our downloadable show archive. If you have an email, audio is preferred, send that thing over to videogameshow@dreamstation.cc. With us today, we have a couple guys in studio, and we also have a couple on the way. We have Tom.
I still can't think of anything funny to say. Crap, I had all week to...
You did.
Ask me again at the end of the show, and then we can...
No! You don't get to ask again at the end of the show.
We also have Keith with us today.
92 days, they'll talk like a pirate did.
And we also have a special guest. We have Ross Erickson. Ross, do you want to just tell us who you are and where you're from?
I'm Ross Erickson, the game planner for Xbox Live Arcade at Microsoft.
Bob and Phil, as I mentioned, will be entering. And as they pop in, we'll let you know. So what are we going to talk about this week? We got an awful lot to talk about. We have what's new at Dream Station. We have what games are we playing. EA Battle for Middle-Earth 2 Community Day coverage. We have an interview with Lewis Castle. We'll be chatting with Ross here for a little bit. Our forum question, and lastly, our mailbag.
Mailbag.
Nice.
There you go.
Wow, very good.
I've been waiting 12 months to do that.
I know. Ross and I have been playing email tag, trying to get a time. We've been trying to get him on the show for, just about a year now.
Am I done now? Can I go?
Yeah. Thanks for stopping by, Ross. We'll see you.
Housekeeping.
All right, so we got the intro music.
I like the Cosby rap.
Dr. Dre, Bill Cosby rap. And that was sent to me care of Trickman Terry, trickmantimes.com. Link will be in the show notes. Firstly, welcome one and all who arrived to our podcast here through either Major Nelson's pimpage, Godfrey at Gamertag Radio's pimpage, or any of the various and assorted pimpages that are out there. Welcome aboard. Supposedly, the Transformer movie script has been leaked to the internet, of course, and an Xbox 360 and iPod are both going to be Transformers.
No, we're playing Factor Crap now? I say that was crap.
This was internet rumor. I don't know what the iPod and the Xbox 360 would do in the fight against the evil, but...
No, the question is, how much did Microsoft and Apple pay to, like, be part of the Transformer movie?
People will actually think, oh, he must know something because he works at Microsoft.
Weren't you the one that signed the deal to get the 360 in the Transformers movie?
That was me and Spielberger working on a script.
Do you guys remember Soundwave and Blaster? They were the cassette tape?
Cassette tape, yeah.
Moving along here, Bill Gates will be stepping down as God of the Known Universe in 2008. He will be removing himself from Microsoft day-to-day activities to concentrate on his charity, which is kind of cool. Have you had the opportunity to meet Mr. Gates?
Not on a personal one-on-one basis, no. I've done group reviews with our executives that are above me. He's a huge, huge Zuma fan. He and his kids play Zuma together all the time. That's right. Overall, he gives us lots of feedback. He thinks we're really a good example of kind of convergence of bringing, you know, the idea of the commerce on live with the unified gamer tag and the ability to do commerce transactions. And just frankly just loves the whole type of game experience you can get on a console with this versus trolling around on a PC for forever.
Wait, so what's wrong? He doesn't like gaming on the PC anymore? Does anyone like gaming on the PC anymore?
I do.
Well, I think it's for him. He likes playing with live with his kids. But yeah, as far as Bill and the company, he's very much devoted, almost no change at all for the next 2 years to Microsoft. As far as a day-to-day executive role after 2 years, yeah, he'll be very much focused on curing world hunger, all things health-related. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. This guy's got two chances in his life to really do major, major things, and his loves of life of Microsoft being one, and now being able to work on the foundation with as well funded as this foundation is, you can do some pretty amazing things on a global level.
You can get a heck of a lot more accomplished than if we were to hear at the podcast raise $17.48.
Yeah, I don't think he's looking for PayPal donations to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but
$2.87. There you go. Good luck with your causes.
Seriously, they have been able to do some pretty incredible things, and you know, everyone here is proud of the fact that obviously Microsoft has been able to put him in a position that he can go off and do these incredible things with the rest of his life and, you know, long term. So
can't bring it up now after that. I was going to bring up the whole Pirates of Silicon Valley movie because it was a really good movie, but that that portrays Bill in the exact opposite than we just talked about.
Hello.
All right. Hi, Phil.
Let's continue on with housekeeping here. The Xbox Jump ad won the Ad of the Year award.
What did you guys think of that?
Did you guys see the gun ad where they were in the mall and they were using their...
Yeah, that was the best.
Yeah, I like that one.
That should have won.
Especially the guy that was in the car going, one sec, okay, I'll finish my cell phone call. And then he just dies on the dashboard.
Was that banned?
Yeah. Are you kidding? In our politically correct climate?
Tim Schafer, the creator of the Psychonauts game, wants people to send letters en masse to Microsoft to get his game, Psychonauts, to be backwards compatible on the 360.
Me too.
Well, I understand where he's coming from because he was upset because he went told Microsoft that he could bring his developers over there, and they could probably do the compatibility testing in like a day. Microsoft kept, I guess, just kept brushing them off, you know, and they haven't ported it yet.
The infamous emulation ninjas probably have long since had it on their list of titles to work on, and the tweaking and balancing of everything is difficult.
Neither are we. We're emulation pirates.
One of my favorite quotes from Tom that you didn't hear that, Ross. So last week we ticked off one of our people on our forums who was very hard at work getting a DreamStation wiki up. For those of you who don't know, a wiki is kind of like a public encyclopedia users can come in and comment on. There is a wiki. We will have the link in the show notes, but the address for the wiki is, Keith?
DreamStationWikis.com.
What's the difference between a wiki and a blog?
A blog's edited by only one person. Wiki is publicly editable.
Next topic.
What's new at DreamStation this week? We have a review of GT Legends for the PC. We have Atari Masterpieces Volume 2 for the N-Gage. Shadow Hearts from the New World for the PS2 has also been reviewed on our site.
Next topic.
What have we been playing in the past 7 days? The top three most played games that we've done. For me, it would be Battle for Middle-Earth 2 for the PC and City of Villains. I haven't had a lot of time to play. It's been kind of a hectic, stressful week. Phil, since you're sitting here with a mouthful of Subway, what have you played in the last 7 days?
Played Warcraft and pretty inspired to try to play Halo 2, but it just never happened.
Tom, what have you been playing in the last 7 days?
Dawn of War for the PC, Command & Conquer Red Alert for the PC, City of Villains for the PC, but every time I play City of Villains, I keep saying to myself, why am I still playing this?
Keith, what are you playing?
World of Warcraft, City of Villains, and Madden 2006.
For the PlayStation 2?
Xbox.
Ross, what have you played game-wise in the last week here?
Luminous Live. I am playing Street Fighter 2.
You know what? I don't think we're allowed to ask you these questions anymore.
Wait a minute. I'm not done. I've been playing Guild Wars, and I just fired up the new Super Mario on my DS.
You're just rubbing in the whole Street Fighter thing right in our face right before we're even at the topic.
It so is that we can ship the damn thing and you guys can start playing it too.
Next topic.
Your official title is something very long, but basically you're the dude in charge of Xbox Live to pick which games go and when they go. Is that a correct statement?
Not so much in charge of what games necessarily, but I'm the starting point, I guess. What my job is to manage the developers that come in and say, hey, I want to get my title on Xbox Live Arcade. How do I do that? It's also going outbound to various companies and saying, hey, we think your title would be good on Live Arcade. Let's present the whole scenario and see what you think about moving forward in that direction. There's an entire studio here called Microsoft Casual Games, so it involves all things like the MSN game site, and of course Xbox Live Arcade's part of this. You guys,
wait, so is your office all like lounge chairs, and you have like Dean Martin playing?
It's stacked to the ceiling with boxes and discs and games.
That doesn't sound very casual.
Yeah,
I know. You're ruining the illusion. Just lie to me.
Honestly,
make me happy.
I don't even like that word anymore. Casual games doesn't really mean much anymore.
To me, it means chicks and girlfriends, to be completely
well,
honest.
Well, so what does casual mean? If I
no,
only play
to me, it
8 hours.
Uno.
Yeah, Uno. So is Uno a hardcore game if you're playing it 20 hours a week? I don't know.
If you're playing the Antichrist, it's pretty, just, it's pretty high.
For those of you new to the show, I fired up Uno. So who do I get matched up against? The dude's gamer tag was the Antichrist, and he had some big evil demon, and he just smoked me at Uno. I mean, draw four, ha ha ha. So you were just recently snatched up and interviewed by Major Nelson.
Actually, not just Major, but actually several podcasts lately over the last month or so. But we have so much to talk about. I don't want to make this boring and retread for anybody who's listening to other casts as well.
You're going
to
have more fun on this interview than you have on any other podcast.
I've been looking forward to this for years.
So we're going to jump into it. What's up with the Street Fighter 2? The rumors are that it's pretty much playable single player. It's very nice, wonderful, but it's unplayable online because of the horrid lag.
So I would say to that, I think GameSpot 3 to 4 weeks ago or so posted a preview. I don't know that it was horribly unplayable. In fact, I believe the comment on the review said that it was passable but not great yet because of lag issues. I should point out at the beginning here, this is not a Microsoft title, this is a Capcom title. So they're absolutely in the driver's seat as to when they believe it's in release quality. Literally in daily bug triage with them, making sure that you know the stuff that is keeping us from shipping gets addressed with their developer. Probably the biggest challenge here of them working with some older coin-op cabinet legacy code that was never ever designed for the kind of optimizations that you'd have to do when you're dealing with ping times and latency issues over a network. So you have to do some predictive things and really diving into the code. And believe me, when you work with really old legacy code, it's just not that simple to start making the old match with the new really well. And our advanced technology group, they've gone in and we've consulted with them on how to optimize this kind of streaming over the network to reduce to a very, very minimum the latency issues you have. We've had some real breakthroughs. I won't give you a date yet specifically, but we're definitely not months away from shipping. And in terms of weeks, we're getting really, really close. The version that was previewed earlier is a long ways from what we're playing with right now.
By the end of summer, can we say by Christmas?
If we're not in the summertime, that would be disastrous. In the summer months, for sure, and probably sooner than you think.
In the roundtable with Peter Moore last week...
Ross hasn't heard the roundtable. Nobody's heard the roundtable yet, as a matter of fact. So
the question was brought up, how was Dreamcast able to go over the net with a 56K modem so smoothly, but yet we're having problems with newer technologies?
That really comes right back to, if you design a game from scratch...
I'm just livid right now, especially with everything that's going on. This is as best as I got, so I'm just not going to be on today. I apologize.
Wait, Ross, you actually know who Bob is?
Oh, yeah. I've been listening to you guys since day one.
but no one knows who I am.
Before I so rudely interrupted everyone, we were just talking about basically Dreamcast games could work on a 56K modem. And Ross, I think the point you were making was that those were programmed from the ground up, much like you mentioned Dead or Alive 4.
I'm going to stop laughing now. Sorry. Whoop. All right.
Nothing. All right, yeah. You're permanently on the show, Ross. I'm sorry.
Count me in. If you design a game for a 56K baud modem, that you can make a pretty lag-free game of, you know, almost any kind of game. It's just a question of being able to work with code from day one.
Street Fighter has been online before. Why did they choose to go the straight-up arcade old school rather than one of these newer versions?
It is better a question for Capcom than Microsoft, honestly, but I can comment slightly on this, is that it has a lot to do with the arcade footprint size of games that we have as well.
Can you go into that a little bit?
We have decided that our guideline for live arcade is that a game should be 50 megabytes or smaller. For those who don't have a hard drive in their Xbox, for both those guys...
Right, two of them. And it's your fault because you put two stinking versions of the console.
I know. Believe me, I would love to... I don't know. On the other end of this argument, though, is this issue of how big should it be as well. And I actually think there's something, a lot to be said for having the kind of game experience kind of pick up and play and not provide sort of this unlimited, well, if it's digitally distributed, it can be an arcade title, because I think we're actually trying to drive more of a efficiency of gameplay type and a graphical bar that meets certain expectations. You could re-download it wherever you're logged in with your gamer tag. Your status as a purchasing customer travels with you. So if you wanted to and you download it over at your friend's house, you'll be able to play the full version as long as you're logged in on your gamer tag. When he logs in or under his new gamer tag or the other person, he'll have the trial version left behind on his hard drive.
Oh, that's cool.
It's kind of a nice leave behind. So it's almost a little bit of a viral marketing effect.
I know that you had contacted one Mr. Scott Lance, who we were very pumped on his Land of Legends game. Unfortunately, I don't know that he had the best success with sales of the game.
Yeah, I remember that, because I contacted Scott after saying, hey, I heard what you said about Live Arcade, and you know, if you ever want to have some discussions, I'm the guy you should probably start talking to with. He emailed me back, was kind of appreciative, and thought it was cool, but I haven't really heard much since. Oh.
To get a game certified through Microsoft, to get it onto the console, there's a really good article a couple weeks back on why no indie developers will be console indie developers, because it's unlike a PC where I could just make a game, stick it out there, people can download it, you can even do like a digital distribution to buy it. You're not going to probably get your homebrew game on them. Even a game as famous as like Darwinia, they're probably going to be on Live, is from what I'm hearing.
Chris, remember that point. And let's discuss this again early fall.
Okay.
So there is no dev kit for Live games?
Well, a dev kit for a Live arcade title is exactly the same kit as you would use to make Halo 3. It's the same piece of hardware, same XDK, the whole thing.
Are you a Halo fan, Russ?
You know, I'm a first-person shooter guy on the PC. I'm still kind of a big keyboard. And I do think that ultimately the best console player on an Xbox controller going up against Fatality is always going to lose. That said, though, I think there are things you can do to make first-person shooters on a console. My son Taylor, who's 16, plays Halo on the console a lot, and I watch him play, and I'm in awe of him. I mean, I have to confess, I just haven't invested the learning curve in time to learn how to play a good first-person shooter. Call me lazy, I'd just rather play that kind of game on my PC.
Plans for having interaction between gamers on Windows and gamers on Live. Okay. Is there a plan? Have you guys considered this?
That was really part of the key vision that Bill was announcing at E3 with the Live Vision Anywhere strategy. It isn't just about checking your achievement score on your cell phone and buying an upgrade for Forza. It is, in fact, there are certain classes of games where being able to play cross-platform is definitely the target we're aiming for in this kind of future connected world. Like in the case of Uno, if we were all playing a game together, and let's say I happen to be commuting home on a bus or a train or something, and I'm on my cell phone, I could be connected into this Live Anywhere world. A couple of you guys might be on your Xbox, and maybe someone else is playing in from their PC, maybe from a Messenger client or something like that. And we're all in one game session together, and I don't know what you guys are on, and you don't know what I'm playing on, and it really doesn't matter. Now, it'd be a hard thing to be playing Halo 3 on a cell phone, of course, right? Same thing with throwing a Dragon Punch on a cell phone playing Street Fighter. That probably doesn't make sense to you.
Just put it on speed dial.
Do you see those kind of features making it all the way to XP, or is this going to be a Vista-only thing?
I don't think there's been specific announcements on this. I really do believe that as we move forward, it's all going to be a Vista story for bringing these everything together. It's more of just business decision to promote the infrastructure and frankly, a lot of the plumbing that's got to be written to support this kind of thing, getting PCs tied into Live.
So we're going to have to actually buy Vista?
Yes, you will.
Wait, what's wrong with .NET Everywhere, .NET Compact Framework, everyone running C-sharp code on all platforms?
Can I say next topic? I love that guy. Who is that guy anyway?
That's Chris.
It's Chris.
Is it? That's awesome.
The story behind that one was the first couple shows were a big mess, so not unlike this one. This is brilliance. This is genius. How much is it going to cost me to get a game? I just made a game, and I say, hey, man, I want to get this thing on Xbox Live Arcade. Can you go into prices, or is that taboo?
So as to the cost of getting a title on Live Arcade, I get this a lot, both from small two guys in a garage somewhere who want to throw up their shingle and start a business, all the way up to EA. Developing a cost of doing a Live Arcade title is really, I sort of break it down into different buckets. The cost of development itself, obviously variable on how many people are making the project. There's another title that we are shipping this summer, late summer, called Small Arms. Small Arms is Super Smash Bros. Melee with gun. And it's literally done by two, again, really incredibly talented guys here in the Seattle area. There's the cost of development itself and all the various technology. I mean, you do have to get a dev kit. Occasionally, we'll loan those out as well to small devs. Then there's the cost of testing a game. There's what we call localization, or getting it available in all the languages and culturally making it relevant in certain areas of the world. And then finally, there's the obtaining of various ratings. All of the Live Arcade games are still subject to the same ESRB issues, or other parts of the world have their own ratings board. So generally that's not a very big cost element at all. But I would say on the low end, it probably costs, you know, maybe $50,000 to get a game done. On the deluge of interest in this has been so high. We're not throwing the doors wide open to this and letting anybody publish anything, because there'd be a lot of crap out there and people having to wade through tons of stuff that just isn't very, very good.
So it's not a trivial amount of money. I mean, I'm not saying $50,000 is a lot compared to the millions of dollars people spend on games, but this is not, hey, I got a bug at my butt this week and I'm going to go write this game. I mean, like you said, you got quality and all these other things to look out for.
Well, yeah, this is not a homebrew kind of platform. I mean, this is a business first and foremost of Live Arcade, of trying to obviously make another, we're trying to make money on the platform, obviously. We're a business, and we're also trying to be a very key part of kind of a strategic reason you'd want to buy a 360 versus, say, if you were only going to pick one console in your home. We hope that this becomes a real big part of a tiebreaker if you were on the fence as to getting this console or somebody else's.
I'm assuming that you can't. Can you get into percentages that Microsoft takes versus what I really get as a developer, or no?
Those things are really confidential with developers, but I will say that we very much standardized on a pretty simple revenue share formula that say that all the developers, I think, without exception across the board, have all said this is very generous and Microsoft is more than fair in this. I mean, we've had some phenomenal conversion rates across the board with most titles, and there's good money to be made here if you build a really good game.
I was just going to ask, so it is very realistic then to get your $50,000 back and more?
Oh, easily. I would say that, you know, we've shipped, I think, on the range of, you know, in the many millions of downloads of Live Arcade games. And the one thing I would say about the financial possibilities here are that we've, in many cases, quintupled or even higher. What's higher than quintupled?
Pentupled.
There you go. Some of the returns on some of these games.
That's a better answer than I was expecting. I mean, the amount of money that it would cost to develop an indie game is not insurmountable. And it's, if you're serious about doing it, you can get that kind of money. And that's what I was kind of worried about. I didn't want to see just, I mean, Mutant Storm, I think I remember playing that on Reflexive.
Bob is a big Reflexive arcade. Well, all of us are, but Bob is the spokesperson. I've been trying to get them on the show, too.
Yeah, Reflexive is definitely a supporter of Live Arcade. We really love their work as well. They have a very good design ethic of what you should and can be doing on Live Arcade. But there's some incredible talent out there in these small little shops that a lot of them are sort of refugees out of the big publishers, too. Back, just let me wrap up this thing on the cost. I would say, without question, no one needs to spend $1 million making a Live Arcade title, that's for sure. For the kind of quality bar we're looking for, 50K is probably extremely light these days. I would say that probably the average range is somewhere between, you know, maybe 200K and 400K is probably average for making a really decent Live Arcade game. And that includes, you know, high-def quality graphics, widescreen, and gives you Xbox Live Network multiplayer support. It's all about the gameplay itself, a game that's very approachable and the pick-up-and-play nature of it. Has a sufficient amount of content as well, and of course fits in that 50-megabyte footprint.
At this point in the interview, I got to just stop it, but there's a lot more that we're going to get to probably next week. Thank you again, Ross, and you guys will be hearing from Ross again next week.
Next topic.
What we're going to jump into now is an interview that I had one-on-one with Lou Castle. He's one of the grandfathers of the real-time strategy genre. He created the Command & Conquer franchise. He worked for Westwood. He's a VP over at EA now in Electronic Arts Los Angeles. So I got a chance for about 7 minutes to ask him some questions one-on-one. I'd like to thank him in advance, Louis Castle, for being open to my questions and being such a good sport about it.
We're in here with Lou Castle. He's the creator, the god of RTS, right? I have a bunch of questions. They're going to be in random order.
Okay.
One of the things I was talking to Aaron about was the achievements. Uh-huh. I mean, EA has a launch titles for the achievements were, they were kind of a joke. I mean, to be honest, open up a player profile on Madden to 300 points. All of a sudden, everybody has these gamer scores of 8 million points. Now, I noticed I got an achievement when we were the single-player campaign. It was like 5 points. That
right.
says to me that you're going to get a lot of stuff
yes.
with a low point amount, which makes it a little bit better. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, just that, you know, we're all gamers, and we play a lot on there, and we know the gamer scores are an important piece. So we've reserved a lot of points in that gamer score to reflect not just your progression through the single-player campaign, but through single-player skirmish, and multiplayer campaigns. Yeah, the points are well distributed against those, and they relate to the difficulty of the task. So when you see somebody with a lot of points with a good gamer score, it means they've played the game well, or they really know it, they finish it all or whatever.
Right, they didn't open the credits menu to get it.
Exactly.
Right.
We went a different step, too. We actually were really big on the fact that the achievements ought not to just be a badge, but they ought to affect the actual gameplay. So the achievements, especially some of the more powerful achievements, actually unlock heroes that you can then use in the hero versus hero game. So it's a feedback mechanism that I think is really cool, and I wish more games did it, where the achievements actually unlocked or changed gameplay in a way that was meaningful, so that there's more to achieving it than just a check mark. You actually have a reason to go get them.
And that, I mean, in addition, one of the things that would be really cool is with the achievements, if they gave you some sort of, I mean, most of the achievements have like a logo or something. It might be cool to allow that logo, once you've unlocked it, to become your gamer pick. So if you've beat the evil campaign, you have a nasty looking Eye of Sauron, you could throw that in your gamer pick.
Right,
people can see it.
We've got some gamer pick stuff, but that's definitely something that and themes, basically, your Blades themes. Are things that we have out there that are available too, but it's a great idea. You're right on the same page that we are, which is you want the stuff to be a little bit more meaningful than just a check mark.
Anybody with, you know, 50 points can go out and buy some logo. If I've earned it and I've fought my way through some game
exactly.
that's very tough, I'm going to show that off a little.
Yep,
jumping
exactly.
into general RTS.
Uh-huh.
So you're very familiar with the genre. What are some of the ways you've seen maybe the genre got away from maybe the way that you wanted to go into Warcraft, Starcraft? These are huge,
great, very popular games.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the worst thing that you see going wrong with RTS that if you could say, hey, I want to change this and I want to do this completely different, I want to...
Well, I guess overall it would be complexity in user interface to get to depth of game experience. So I'm a firm believer in the depth and richness of the game experience and always adding new features and innovations. What I hate is that many of those have come at a sacrifice of easy-to-understand interface design. And I think if you look at Battle Familiar 2, some of the most advanced features are implicit in the way you play the game, like flanking. If you bring your cavalry in from the side or from behind, they get the bonus of flanking. You don't have to click a special button to do flanking, right? I mean, it's implicit in the way that you're playing the game. If your guys go to high ground, they get better range because they're on high ground. You didn't need to, like, press the special go to high ground or use high ground button. It speaks to the trend, which I don't like in the genre, which is, hey, we have this new whiz-bang feature, let's just add another hotkey, or let's just add another option in the menu screen, or add yet another dial on what already looks like a 747 command screen
right.
on the dashboard. And I think that as designers, we just need to work harder to do more with less and make these things more implicit and sort of extend out of normal gameplay activity as opposed to separate. So what happens is the trend is you have to have played five of these games to have some clue, to have the vocabulary
and
to play.
Can jump into it.
Yeah, and you get this decaying pyramid where each time the user base that's knowledgeable keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller because the person comes in, they may like the genre, but they can't get it. It's just too complicated. And even racing games went through that for a while, and thankfully they've come back around. So I guess the trend that I didn't like is I didn't like seeing user interface suffer for complexity and depth of gameplay. And thankfully I'm seeing some games that are very encouraging now that are reversing that trend.
Yeah, let's jump into a multi-core processor. I'm going to make the assumption, and correct me if I'm wrong, this wasn't designed from the ground up with a multi-core processor in place.
Yeah, correct.
Having the ability to go, we talk a little Sony with their crazy processor, and you get the Xbox processor. What does that give you? You're talking about doing more with less. Now you got two processors. What can we expect to see, and how's that going to affect your design?
Well, all games are built around maximizing the hardware that's available at the time. All the game engines that are out there right now were not designed implicitly for the use of multi-core technology, both on the dual core on the PC, by the way, as well as multi-core.
Right, and that's
technology,
not a
right?
crack on anything.
Right, no, it's just stuff. Everybody,
absolutely
right?
Absolutely right.
So all of us in the industry are going through and saying, okay, well, how do we use those to the best of our ability right now, and how do we slowly but surely move some processes off onto separate threads that are thread safe that can run independently?
Right.
And so that's what's happening right now. And already a lot, I mean, we're getting a good use out of that second processor in this game because we've already pulled out some of the things that are very processor intensive. Are we anywhere
close to?
So it
wasn't designed from the ground up, but you are taking advantage.
We're already taking advantage of it. It's not like it's just running on one of the cores. It's actually using multiple cores. Are we using them as effectively as we might? No. But I would submit to you that nobody is,
right.
And nobody will be for the next 2 or 3 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, it'll be a long time before people are really pushing the machine to its limits. You know, when you look at a game like Black that came out for the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox, and it looks phenomenal, you go, wow, if I had shown you that game the day that the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 had shipped, you would not believe that those machines had that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that's still, when you talk to the guys, yeah, they're pushing it pretty hard, but there's still more under the hood.
Right.
So I'm really excited because, you know, frankly, we never got the most out of the last generation. And this generation's already tens of 50 times more powerful, and it's continuing to grow. So I'm really excited by the multi-core technology because I think you're going to see some phenomenal products out of it.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Great questions.
Thanks.
Next topic.
Electronic Arts Battle for Middle-Earth 2 Community Day event coverage. They got 8 community people together, 3 podcasters, and a bunch of different websites. I'm going to have them all on the list rather than tick anybody off because I forgot about them. I'm going to have them in the show notes. Very, very cool. They flew us out to Seattle, and we got to hang at Microsoft for 2 days to play the near going gold of Battle for Middle-Earth 2. It's the real-time strategy game. This is the 360 version. It's the first real-time strategy game that's going to be out on the 360, and it looks to me that it's the first real-time strategy game that even has a holy chance in hell of succeeding with the casual gamer. There's a whole history of the real-time strategy game audio that we recorded at the event. Gamertag Radio is hosting that. Godfrey has it up. If you're kind of into the whole history of it, very sweet, very, very cool.
That's with Luke Castle, right?
Lewis Castle. He was the guy who created Command & Conquer. Most of the people there, I'd say out of the 8, only 4 of them have played real-time strategy games. And it was funny because when we were playing one-on-one skirmish, I was like, well, screw this. I'm just going to do a rush because these guys have no idea what it even means. So I sent my builders off to find them, and then I killed them within 30 seconds. That's my biggest fear, and I made that clear with people who aren't into real-time strategy. I think all it takes is a couple losses on Xbox Live, and you could potentially throw that guy away and never play it again. Luke Castle, again, he's the guy who kind of invented the RTS genre. They put him in a room for a couple years, and they funded his research, and they said, dude, figure out how to do a console to have a real-time strategy game. Figure out a good interface, and he did. I asked him, is this just a port then? Not at all, because he had to rip so much of the code out, because all the UI and interface code had to be pulled, as well as all the control code, and even some of the graphics, because the 360 actually uses the highest res graphics from no matter what your zoom level is, whereas the PC lowers the detail as you zoom out so that it doesn't bog your box down as much. Give some props here. Amrit Lay is a producer. Raj Yoshi is a producer over at EA. Aaron Kaufman was a community guy. He kind of set this all up. The first day we kind of had an overview. It was really cool. We got to actually tour around the Microsoft Xbox campus in Seattle. It was interesting. They all had individual offices. It wasn't like open space that everybody sat, like cubicles kind of where I'm at now. We got to take a tour of the Xbox Live Control Center, and Microsoft really made us feel at home. They had all kinds of stuff, cool artwork on the walls and stuff. They had, like, monumental cases. I have some pictures up that'll be up on the site in the coming week here. The millionth Xbox that was sold, or the, you know, this number of Halo or whatever. So I'd like to thank Tony Hines and the guys at Microsoft and for making us feel like we belong there and we could live our little fantasy for a lot of us. That was a big, big thrill. After that, we dove right into a room, and we actually got the controller. We got a brief demo. Then we went on to the multiplayer, and we had a little tournament at the end, followed up by kind of a post-mortem. I was so hesitant about the control scheme, but I have to say, once I grabbed the controller, it took me about 2 minutes to get into it, and I really dug it. It was almost easier to individually manage my troops than it is on the PC. Now, is the controller better than the PC? Would I recommend you get the 360 version of this game if you have a PC and you're a PC gamer? No, not at all. But it was a hell of a stab. I don't think they could have really done anything better on the console side of it. You hold the trigger to hit the menus, they pop out from the side. When you let go of the trigger, they pop back in. Everything could be done with the A button and the stick, but there were shortcuts. I was really amazed. Nobody said anything bad about the control scheme. We started nitpicking all the other things that we said, well, maybe you should do this and maybe you should do that. We're talking about the single player. Well, I'm not big into the single player campaigns. It's pretty much the same campaign. I skip all the stories. I don't read any of the text. I just want to go. They kept giving me these cutscenes. Oh, look, there's one of our giants and he's tied down in the corner. And I'm just like, can't skip it, can't skip it. And then I had no idea what I was doing because I don't pay any attention to plot at all. Microsoft has free pop. I found that amazing. I don't know why. Yeah, you could just, like, go to the cooler. And
very impressed with cola products for some reason, especially if they're under a dollar.
So a little culture thing here. Microsoft has had free soda for all its employees since day one, like 30 years ago.
But I was like, holy crap, free pop. And I don't even drink pop, but I'm like, dude, it's free. I do now. Yeah, bouncing off the walls. After we got through the single player, we jumped into the multiplayer. Here's my biggest problem with it. It's four players only, and there is no co-op multiplayer. All of us here play real-time strategy games. Our biggest thing was three or four of us would jump on and we would beat up on a couple computer AI and we would pump that computer up until it was a good fight. There isn't going to be any of that. So that goes back to my big problem is if the four of us buy this game, Keith, if you got to play against somebody, even if it's us, are you going to be interested in purchasing the game?
Probably not.
I think all of us kind of went around the table at the end of the day and were like, it would have been nice to do co-op. And especially since it's such a foreign game to a lot of these players that they've never played strategy games before, it'd be nice to take a pro, jump on there with your pal, and be able to whoop on the computer a little bit. As you get you're figuring out, all right, I understand what I got to do, then you can go ahead and jump on Xbox Live. They're going to have ladders and balancing and all that stuff, which is, it's a lot to do, but it's almost expected now. Bungie has raised the bar so high with their matchmaking on Halo 2, and little minor bugs. You have to pick your army by icon. It didn't say goblins or men of the west. It just had this weird looking little sprite and nobody knew what they were. There's no create a hero, which was from the PC game, and there's no tribute. One of the things was we were rushed by the PC guys. I want to give my money to my friend because, boy, I know I'm going to die. There wasn't the ability to do that at all, so I'm sitting here with $1,000 or whatever it is, and I can't send that over to my pal. Going into the teams, the two PC people got teamed up on the same team, believe it or not, and they just trounced everybody else. Gaming Steve and I were on the same team. We were Team Goblin just because Goblin was the weakest, crappiest monster we could think of. We suck. We started playing tactics where we were like, all right, come hit this building, come hit this building. A second before they swung at the building, we would self-destruct it, and we were high-fiving and talking smack. Gaming Steve and I, the one game, we told them, literally, you two, put your controllers down, playing against Nate and Karen. Put your controllers down for 2 minutes. After the two-minute initial time period was up, within the next 2 minutes, we were already dead. They beat us.
This was a lot funnier the first time you told me.
I know, dude.
Like, now I'm bored out of my mind. When you told us the first time, I was laughing pretty hard, and now it's just boring.
Yeah, come on, Chris. Can we talk about insurance software now?
My days of programming insurance software.
He definitely fit right in.
Well, I got a question. As a PC RTS player, you get into a rhythm of clicking and dragging playing an RTS with your PC and a mouse. You know, moving units over here, and oh, I missed a guy, so just quickly redrag. And
the reticule for selecting stays stationary in the middle of the screen. You rotate the area under the screen, and it was really kind of odd to get used to because, like you said, you're used to click and drag. There's a button to select everybody on your screen. There's a modifier button to select all of the type under my cursor. You hit left on the D-pad and every guy in your army is selected, and that's smart enough not to select builders. You can go through there and deselect different units. You can jump to any unit. Getting your archers to get in the back. Getting your troops to get in the front.
If you are maybe a real hardcore RTS snob playing Age of Empires or Command & Conquer a lot, this game may actually, because it changes conventions from a control point of view, you might have a little trouble adapting.
I think the adaption was fine. All of us PC guys really did adapt. You, like you said, an RTS snob, you're going to turn your nose up at this and say, console, four players only. In reality, as long as you're not that you play a real-time strategy game like Tom does with StarCraft, where basically it sounds like this. He's just typing because he has all the friggin' hotkeys memorized. You're not going to get that level of efficiency out of the controller.
See, I really want this to succeed on the console because I want to play this in the living room on my sofa on the big screen TV, not in my office all the time.
And I think they did a really good job. And everything is a little bit bigger. The dashboard that you normally have at the bottom where you select all your crap, that's pretty much consolidated into the corner. Can't speak highly enough of the interface. And I was a very big skeptic about, how are they really going to do this? This crap ain't ever going to work. But they did it. They nailed it.
Is there any tie to element of the trilogy here? Or?
Dude, he won't even read the cutscenes. I mean, for God's sake, you're really asking the wrong person.
As far as what licenses they got both the movie and the book license. So the little Fruity Hobbit's name that sings Tom Bobbly Bops or whatever his name.
Tom Bombadil?
He's in the game, and I guess he's just like a little holy terror. I haven't seen him in action, but I guess he's just frolicking and dancing and rubbing his hairy feet all over people, creating friction burns on orc armor and stuff. I don't know what his story is, but I don't see
wow.
I'm sure that's exactly what he does, too. Wow.
Hey, besides Tom Bombadil, are there any other uniquely identifiable characters as...
He doesn't know.
All the little heroes, like the History of Violence guy.
Viggo.
Aragorn?
Yeah. Yes, Aragorn. Yeah, Legolas, the elf's there. Magneto's in there.
Magneto's in there?
Gandalf.
I remember playing Magneto.
I think the Hobbits...
Kevin Bacon's in everything, too, right? Isn't he in the game?
He was Tom Bombadil, actually.
They just took the Footloose dance scene and they let him go. I don't know any of the other guys, but yes, all the there's like a big dragon dude. That big spider thing that was in one of the movies, that thing's in it. And it, my biggest concern is a casual gamer, you know, or the console gamer in general ready for a real-time strategy game? And
would you buy this game?
If I don't have a PC, I would probably buy this game if some of the other guys in the crew would buy the game. It wouldn't be something I would play online competitively. If I have a PC, I'm going to say get the PC version because the controls are a little better. You can do stuff like make your own maps, edit your own heroes, and all that stuff. But what Halo was for first-person shooters to the console people, this could be that for real-time strategy games for a console.
Oh, good. So you're saying that someone's going to come out with a really crappy real-time strategy and everyone's going to love it?
Oh!
Zing!
I'm so wounded.
Hey, you're the one who wanted to be on the show.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fact that they brought the gamers out there and they listened to them. I mean, that's the big point. They did want our feedback. They didn't want to get their butt kicked.
They didn't want your feedback.
I hope that in the future we can get some of these other things that real-time strategy people like. Multiplayer, you know, co-op, and more than four people, but I think that really, really depends. If this flops, I don't think we're going to see another RTS port for a very long time. If I was going to give it a number, which isn't really fair because it's not even done yet, I would say I would give it an 8. And again, as Phil pointed out, I wouldn't buy it unless somebody else from my crew did. It's a decent game. I would just go ahead and buy it on the PC, though, because I'm playing the game on PC.
Oh, no, you know, Chris, I have hope about the community because I remember when I first started on Battle.net and I was awful at people gave me pointers. People would come in with a huge rush and I would have no idea how they got that many units right away and they'd give me pointers, really? Build tips. And then eventually I would turn around and do the same thing. I don't think gamers are just... we're not all Counter-Strike players, I'll put it that way.
Well, and to the credit of the Live guys as well, they've done some really good work behind the scenes of getting matchmaking to work really well so that those really hardcore great players are going to get matched with other hardcore great players. Noob getting pwned constantly by the hardcore guy, because that just drives the community apart.
Yeah, is there any kind of background technology in Live that will match me only with, like, you know, single college girls when I...
I think I'm pretty much good to go, and I think because we've recorded quite enough...
Come on, it's only 9:45.
All I know is my left ear looks like a cauliflower now.
We're going to get to the mail and the forums and all that other good stuff next week.
Next topic.
That was show 60 in all its long entirety. If you want to check out our site.
Oh, God.
Yes, I know.
I swear to God, this was the funnest part of my entire week.
Well, I'm glad.
It's only Monday. What the
heck?
It's a backhanded comment.
This is the best 2 hours I've had for the last 2 hours.
Check out our website, dreamstation.cc, for news, reviews, interviews, forums, and our downloadable show archive. Send us an email, audio is preferred, videogameshow@dreamstation.cc. Spread the word to your friends, family, local gaming stores. Again, I want to thank any new listeners that have come over here. So we hope to see you same time next week, and we hope to get back into our mailbag and everything else next week. And Ross has now joined the rest of the monkeys with berating me as I try and keep the show on track. In all seriousness, though, I thank you so much for coming on. It was definitely the highlight of some of the guests that we've ever had. I had a really, really good time.
This is the best guest I've had all week.
Of all the interviews I've done today, this was the finest. Guys, I'll come on anytime. This is just a blast.
We Were you guys able to make your gamer tags before Live went live?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Sweet.
That's the benefit of working at Microsoft.
See, the funny thing is he isn't really a Microsoft employee. He's just some dude I met the other day, and I was like, well, they'll never know. Ross Erickson? Whatever. Thank you again, sir, for being on the show. I think all of us had a blast.
Nobody more than me. I just can't even conceive of the editing you must have to do
it's,
now.
It's going
to
be interesting. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on. And
there you go.
All right, man.
For being on the
easy.
Show, Ross.